In an odd but tender moment from a recent novel, a woman quizzes her husband while he sleeps. He isn't a guy to talk about his feelings, so she justifies these journeys into his psyche as necessary sort of State of the Union checks on how he is doing. "Are you lovable?" she asks. His slumbering face mushes up doubtfully. His insecurity is no shock, but it's so sad. "Are you helpful?" she asks. Now, this should be a no-brainer. Her husband works at a high school with high-risk kids. He has a million success stories and so many grateful parents. But again, his face scrunches up. "No, no, I'm not. I'm not helpful." Finally, she asks, "Does your wife love you?" He breaks into a grin. He giggles in his sleep. "Yes, yes, my wife loves me." She dozes off, dreaming about how she can help shift the other two answers to also be yes. So where does this belief come from? That we are unlovable, that we are not good enough? I'm not going to ask this question out loud of you, so don't worry. But I bet if I ask those people who feel like they are not good enough to raise their hands, around us we would see people of kindness, of service, of accomplishment. We would be shocked. People that we love who don't know that they are lovable. Why? A few weeks ago, an enthusiastic group of folks from this congregation traveled to Spokane for the district assembly. So our congregation is part of a district, which is four states: Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Alaska. And we all went to district assembly in Spokane to learn together from a philosopher and professor named Tandy Aka, who teaches at UU seminaries. And she told us about BLICs. A BLIC is a foundational belief, a belief that you can't prove is right or wrong, but that defines how you move through the world. We all have a pretty big pile of BLICs coloring our worldview. So imagine that you are building a log cabin out of freshly sawn logs. Piles of fragrant wood are waiting to be put into place. Now, if this log cabin is your life, the BLICs are your logs. They are integral to who you are. Your life is built on top of them in layers. BLICs are a huge part of religious life, since God and faith and the afterlife are concepts that we tend to feel really strongly about. We have really emotional ties to them, but we can't actually prove them one way or another. I love jokes, and my favorite kind of joke is certainly the religious kind. So let's set the scene. Pope Ratzinger, a few years back, is in his office at the Vatican. He's returning emails and making agendas, not very exciting stuff. But he gets a phone call, and it's God. God says, "Hey, buddy, how is it going? What's the weather like in Vatican City today?" The Pope says, "It's good. It's sunny. It's beautiful. You know, Italy, we have great weather." God continues, "Well, I've made this big decision. I've decided to take your advice and establish one true religion on earth. There's going to be no more bickering, no more holy wars, no more changing borders in Israel and Palestine. One true faith. I'm going to come down to earth later today, and I'm going to make the announcement." Well, the Pope is thrilled. He's jumping up and down while trying to stay on the telephone. "Wonderful. Oh, I can't wait. That's wonderful. We'll get the biggest stage and the best sound system, and I'll call all the cardinals and all the sisters, and everyone's going to be there." "Well," God says, hedging, "about that, I won't be coming to Italy." "Well, why not? Where else would you be?" Just then, the Pope glances down at the telephone and realizes that God is calling from Salt Lake City. Oh. Thank you. So this is the Pope's blick. He believes there is one true faith, the faith God would choose, God's self would pick, the faith that is better than all the others. There's no way to prove that he's right or wrong. The criteria for one true religion is different for every person. Still, a lack of evidence isn't stopping him. He would probably live or die based on the belief that Catholicism is the way to go. Just like a person who is positive that there is no God has an atheist blick, or a Buddhist who really thinks there's no other way has a Buddhist blick, blicks are important enough to cause us strong emotional reactions when they're threatened. Think of holy wars. Think of segregated neighborhoods. Blicks are a serious business. So blicks color how we look at everything in the world, not just faith. Some blicks are appearance-based. I remember from watching old Nick at Night TV shows when I was a kid, I got the impression that women with glasses were smart. This didn't hurt my feelings because I had glasses, so it was easy to believe. Perhaps from watching TV, you get the idea that young men in baggy pants are dangerous, that single parents have less coddled children. But how could you factually prove any of these things? How can you measure how coddled is too coddled for a child? Everyone has a different opinion on that. And what does it mean to be dangerous? Young men in big pants don't seem dangerous to fabric manufacturers who like all that extra yardage. And for women in glasses, does that mean book smart? Are they good at fixing cars? Are they emotionally intelligent? So recently, a big blick went bust in Berkeley, California. There, a few friends decided to open a cafe that would serve a delicious, Indian-inspired Sunday brunch, a multi-course meal, after which you would get a bill that would read $0. A note inside reads, "In the spirit of generosity, someone who came before you made a gift of this meal. We hope you will continue the cycle of giving in your own way." Well, let me just tell you about it. There's this place called Karma Kitchen, and it's in Berkeley. It started in 2007. And at Karma Kitchen, volunteers serve the meals every Sunday. And it's fun because a guy in the video says that all week he works on corporate mergers and acquisitions, big, boring business stuff. And once a week, he gets to be generous. This is his chance to be generous. But Karma Kitchen isn't like a soup kitchen because the cycle of generosity isn't one direction. And soup kitchens are great, but you give food to people. They're not expected to give anything back. At Karma Kitchen, the hope is that you will volunteer to wash the dishes or give money for the next person's meal or volunteer to serve or do something outside of the restaurant, sort of pay it forward again. Karma Kitchen moves me personally because it relies on people being kind to each other, and it actually works. The restaurant has been solvent for 7 years. Sunday after Sunday, people gather, hundreds of people, and they eat a tasty meal, and then they decide voluntarily to pay for a total stranger's next food, a person they're unlikely to ever meet. Because Karma Kitchen gives you a choice. You can fill your belly and keep the cafe running, or you can just leave. There's no pressure. It's an anonymous system. Some people leave $10. Some people leave $100. Some volunteer to stay and wash the floor after things close down. But everybody who comes is moved by the unexpected experience of generosity. People cry and they hug. They laugh at the sheer unexpected joy of having a chance to give to people they don't even know. This is the unforeseen joy of finding a place that runs on human kindness. And after 7 years, there's still enough kindness to keep running. One of my favorite things about Karma Kitchen is it runs completely on faith. They don't have any kind of a buffer budget. Every week, they take all the money that they've made and buy food for the next week. So if everyone who came there today for brunch said, "No, I'm not going to give anything," well, that would be the end of Karma Kitchen. And the owners say that would be okay with them. That would just be how it had to be. But it completely relies on the fact that every week, week after week, people will continue to give voluntarily. So what does this have to do with Blix? Well, I believe most of us want to have faith in the goodness of our fellow human beings. We want to believe that people are generous and empathetic and compassionate. But all too often, that faith is difficult to have. People let us down, strangers and friends. We humans can be a selfish group. We neglect each other. We pollute our neighbor's water supply. We refuse to change lanes on I-5 so people can merge. If your heart is heavy with the blick that your fellow earthlings are selfish beasts, a meal at Karma Kitchen will relieve that strain, as well as filling your belly with spicy curry. As soon as you sit at a table, a volunteer begins to serve you, pour your water, make sure you have silverware. And then food purchased by somebody who you've never met, who was there earlier, is gifted to you. And after that experience, you're encouraged to continue the cycle, to be a part of it, to be generous and empathetic and compassionate. Karma Kitchen's gift economy doesn't just work in hippie Berkeley. It's catching fire everywhere. Denver, Salt Lake City, Berlin, in India, all over India, in New Zealand, and especially Indonesia, where there are over 100 versions of Karma Kitchen already. Across many languages and many cultures, this concept of generosity is translated into hot food, into medical care, into new faith in humanity. Karma Kitchen's inspired a medical medical clinic, a taxi company, lots of sort of groups run on the same principles. And it destroys the blick that we're not so great, us human beings. It restores our faith in each other. So I bet you can guess what I'm going to say now. What are your blicks? Do you believe that you are lovable, helpful, generous? Do you believe Catholics have the one true faith? Probably not. Or do you think all people who believe in supernatural stuff are crazy? Do young men in baggy pants scare you? What logs make up your house? Blicks come to us in two ways. They are caught or taught. If this sounds familiar, these are also our religious education principles. The taught blick is easy to understand. If your parents told you, hey, all women who wear glasses are really smart, even if consciously you didn't necessarily believe that, subconsciously you might spend decades finding a woman with glasses to do your taxes every tax season because really you think women in glasses are smarter. Caught blicks happen more subtly. If you're walking downtown and you see white women clutch their purses more tightly when a man of color walks by, you might catch the blick that men of color are purse snatchers. You're being taught a blick in an inadvertent way. Maybe you don't consciously think, hey, I'm getting the impression that white women are afraid of men of color. But the impression has still made itself made on your psyche. The impression's still made. The problem is that our blicks keep us from living in tune with our Unitarian Universalist values. Our first principle is, of course, that every human has inherent worth and dignity. But living in a way that honors this principle is impossible when we're afraid of young men of color or can't honor our own worth because somewhere along the line we were taught that we aren't worthy. How can we ditch our blicks so we can honor our fellow beings with the respect they deserve? Well, fortunately, another UU principle can come to our rescue. Our fourth principle suggests that we affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We Unitarian Universalists are emboldened not only to spend our lives seeking truth, but to help other people do the same. And our BLICs need only to be sought and discovered to be dismantled. The key is mindfulness. Have you ever tried to just sit and watch your thoughts arise? Like smoke from a campfire, spinning up and then dissipating into the air. It's crazy making, it really is, but it's a profoundly important practice. When I'm mindful of my thoughts, I hear the inner voice that says, "I can't believe you're trying to be mindful again. You're terrible at this, give it up." I hear the inner voice that says, "That religious belief that that person just said, that doesn't fit with my worldview, so I'm ignoring it, and I'm losing respect for them." I hear those thoughts arise. You don't have to sit in full lotus pose under the Bodhi tree. Just pause and notice your reaction to a new idea that knocks out of focus your standard thought on politics, on faith, on you, yourself. Make a mental mark. Huh, I'm not very nice to myself. Huh, I get really nervous when I hear a compassionate conservative. Huh, I'm uncomfortable and I'm not sure why. I need to think about why I'm feeling this way. I'm going to mark this moment. Unexamined BLICs aren't healthy for us or for our vision of a more just world. They lead to prejudiced behavior. They shut down new ideas that might change our worldview for the better. The sooner we examine our BLICs, the sooner we'll be free of the unhealthy lenses that influence how we move through this world. So when you feel nervous, defensive, or angry, and you can't quite pinpoint why, pause. Consider the thoughts rising like wood smoke from your mind. Is something happening to you that unsettles a long standardized BLIC? This month, we're considering the theme of revelation. And I encourage you to let mindfulness lead you to a personal revelation. You don't have to trust everything you think. Pause, consider, and tear down that BLIC.